He's a NASCAR guy with a basement shrine, a Langford fan for life. Chargers are off to a terrible start, but that won't change his mind. Matching up all the cornerbacks, touchdown regression and weekly stats. But if your team falls flat, he's the one to blame. He's a Brainiac, Brainiac on the case, with projections that can put us in first place. He's a Brainiac, Brainiac, he's my Clay.
The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. And welcome in to another edition of the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast, back after a brief hiatus last week. Let's be honest, everybody, it's been quiet in the NFL until Sunday. I am Field Yates, as always, hanging out with you alongside Stefania Bell, and Mike Clay is filling in for Matthew today. Stefania, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
All is good. We're getting closer to football, and we had some major, major news. Mike Clay, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, we're getting some warmth finally in the Northeast, so I'm able to like get outside a little bit, get a little color on my skin. Went swimming yesterday at the neighbor's, so it's been good.
Well, Mike, you said
we're on Zoom, so we can see each other, so that theoretically we can interact more normally. I just want to point out, Field, do you see this large life-size NASCAR driver behind?
I sure do.
Mike Clay?
Believe that's Mark Martin, Mike. Is that correct?
You got it. That's my guy. Yeah. It's my guy since I was a kid.
I've just noticed he's got, you know, they're good. They're known for sponsorships and how they use their sponsorships in NASCAR and all over their jerseys. And there's one that just jumps out.
So. Yeah, I'm not even sure if we can talk about it on the podcast or not.
I suppose
he can wear it on a shirt. So
yeah, I just want Mike to have to explain that on Twitter later.
This is more comfortable. Okay, so I'll explain it. It's Mark Martin. It's a stand-up cardboard guy, and he's wearing his Viagra suit. That was his sponsor for a long time. Mark Martin had no shame wearing that and was all about men's health. So no shame there. But I have another one here. It's Dale Earnhardt with his Hershey sponsorship. So if you prefer chocolate, I can move that one ahead here, Stefania.
I'm down with chocolate.
It's interesting. There's quite a range of sponsors on NASCAR driver attire, huh? You got Hershey, you have chocolate all the way to men's health. So they cover a lot of ground there, but they are literally walking billboards. I'm not really sure how to pivot from that to Julio Jones, so I'm just going to go right to it. But on Sunday morning, Julio Jones was traded to the Tennessee Titans. The compensation, a second round pick plus a fourth round pick, going from Tennessee to Atlanta, who sends Julio Jones and a sixth round pick. That sixth round pick is in 2023 to Tennessee. There are a lot of tentacles to this. But before we get into all the specific element of the fantasy fallout, Mike, I'll just ask you, whether it's fantasy, real life, anything in between, what were your initial thoughts on the Julio trade?
Well, first of all, I'm surprised it's come to this. I mean, I know there's been some background reports on it that Julio is perhaps wanted out for a while now. But I mean, if you're the Atlanta Falcons, it seems like you made moves this year to try to win, right? It's not necessarily a full on rebuild. You still have a quarterback nearing the end of his window and Matt Ryan, and you want to try to make a Super Bowl run at his peak like you did a few seasons ago. So moving Julio Jones at this point, obviously problematic. It makes their attempt to win that division or get back into the playoffs very, very tough. So I don't think it makes a lot of sense from that standpoint, but it does make a lot of sense from the Titans standpoint. They obviously lost, as we'll get into shortly, a lot of the top targets for Ryan Tannehill during the offseason. So getting a guy like Jones in there opposite AJ Brown, it takes pressure off both of these guys, which is perfect for Jones at his age, obviously at age 32. So I like it for the Titans. I think they did a nice job quietly fixing some elements of their defense, and the way their offenses have played the past few seasons, they're actually, believe it or not, number one in offensive touchdowns over the past two seasons. So bringing in a guy like Jones obviously helps their cause, and I like their chances to win that division this year.
Stefania, what are your thoughts on this trade in general before we get into the fantasy stuff?
Well, he didn't go to my 49ers. So that was immediately a disappointment because, again, we knew he wanted to go to a team that was going to win the Super Bowl. So unfortunately for Julio, I think he made a mistake because we know the 49ers are going back to the Super Bowl this year. They planned for it. I did like Kyle Shanahan's response, though, which was basically like, if he didn't come to us. I mean, obviously, he knows how talented Julio is. And he was glad that Julio went to the AFC. And in my mind, that meant we're glad he didn't end up at the Seahawks if it couldn't be us.
Yeah, speaking of NASCAR, by the way, Kyle Shanahan was at the Sonoma race on Sunday. I don't know if you knew
yes,
that.
He was. Yes,
down
yes,
there in wine country enjoying
it's actually enjoying a really good track, so that was pretty cool. By the way. I highly recommend it.
I was sitting there thinking to myself, because the sound from Kyle was on a Sunday afternoon, I'm thinking to myself, NFL coaches get very few free days, and especially head coaches. And Kyle Shanahan just offering up quotes on a Sunday. And then I realized it was, of course, because he was at a NASCAR race where there was plenty of cameras and microphones around him. I'm going to empty the cannon out a little bit here just with a couple of thoughts. And again, we will dive into all the fantasy stuff in just a moment. But I think people were surprised based off of the compensation, right? You think Julio Jones, you think to yourself, more than a second round pick. I understand there's a fourth in there as well. So let's just start with a couple of premises here. It was June 6th when this trade was first reported. Think about how many teams have basically cast their die for this upcoming season, right? Your plans are largely laid, and those include a lot of your cap being tied up. And I understand that you can always find ways, or almost always find ways, to create salary cap. But some teams feel as though when you do that, you're basically robbing Peter to pay Paul. So you're going to eventually have it catch up to you. Julio Jones is 32 years old. He missed 7 games last year. This is a guy who's missed quite a bit of practice in recent seasons. And he's making $15 million guaranteed this year. It's not like this is some small check that's being cut to Julio. So I think that the market for Julio was a much smaller pool of teams than you would have guessed if you heard Julio Jones was available for a trade. But the Titans, in so many ways, were a logical partner. They had a glaring, gaping need at wide receiver 2. There's familiarity, of course, their former offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith, is now the Falcons head coach. So you've got a natural rapport working there to make this an amenable move for both sides. So with that being said, let's get into the fantasy impact of it, and because there's so much we could dive into. So let's begin, Mike, with your initial thought on the value for Julio Jones. If you can recall where you may have had him ranked prior to this trade and then where he lands after the trade.
Yeah, so honestly, I did not move him very much, right? He's been kind of floating around, say, the 14 to 22 range for me. And that kind of really comes down to a feeling for, you know, his health and whether or not you think he's going to fall off at all, right? And we look at last season. Obviously, he missed about half of the season with injury, which, you know, you get a little concerned with at his age, at age 32. But when he played, he was awesome. You know, he was during 7 full games, he was a top 5 fantasy wide receiver. And believe it or not, he set a career high in yards per target. So the efficiency was still there and the production was there. You know, he's going from a very pass heavy offense over the past few seasons, going all the way back to when Dirk Cutter was there, to one of the run heaviest offenses in the NFL. But again, also one of the most efficient offenses in the NFL. Again, they're number 1 in touchdowns over the past 2 seasons on the offense side of the ball. The Falcons are 21st in that category during the same span. So it's an offense that could perhaps score a lot more often, a quarterback that has played better, frankly, than Matt Ryan the past couple of seasons. And the target share, it should be similar, honestly. I had him in the, we'll say 21 to 20, maybe a 23% average this season projected, assuming, you know, during weeks he was healthy anyway. And I'm going to fall in that same sort of vicinity here with the Tennessee Titans. Again, the situation is surprisingly very similar because you had Calvin Ridley kind of taking control of the one job in Atlanta. You go to Tennessee and that's where AJ Brown kind of fits that bill and should handle, you know, perhaps the team lead in target. So I think the situation is probably closer than people realize. And keep this in mind too. Atlanta was going to run the ball more, right? So even if we were projecting him a month ago, you still expected with Arthur Smith there for it to be a more balanced, perhaps even a run first offense. So we kind of saw that coming going into this 2021 season. Now it's a little run heavier, but again, he has a path to a pretty strong target share. So I still think Jones is a mid-range wide receiver 2. I would say at worst. I think honestly he could do better than that. And perhaps the Titans could be one of those rare teams that has two top 12 fantasy wide receivers. I think it's possible.
Mike, it's hard for me to disagree with basically anything you said right there. Because a lot of my thoughts mirror those, including I'm glad you sort of dispelled some of the notions, right? That like if he had stayed in Atlanta, they were going to be as pass happy under Arthur Smith as they were under previous offensive coordinators who coached Julio Jones. And now that he's in Tennessee, while it's possible they are as run heavy as they were or they have been for the past couple seasons, Mike, it's also possible that like this team could creep up the rankings a little bit in terms of how many passing attempts it's throwing per game, because you get kind of a chicken versus egg thing, right? Like, are you throwing the football a lot because your wide receiver group, although led last year by Arthur Brown and Corey Davis, is good, but maybe not necessarily as dynamic as there possibly is in the NFL. Like, I would think it stands to reason that if you're trading for Julio Jones, you might be amenable to making him or making your top two wide receivers more involved than they have been in recent years. But ultimately, the wild card is just that it's Julio Jones, right? Like, I understand that he was just traded and there's a reason why he was traded, but I would never discount the possibility of what a change of scenery can do for a player. This is a guy who, from the minute he arrived in Atlanta, the franchise did not necessarily revolve around him. Matt Ryan was already there, but it came pretty darn close to revolving around Julio. And recent years have been frustrating for him. I think there's a breath of fresh air that's being pumped into Julio Jones. And so I've got him at wide receiver 15. It wouldn't surprise me if he looks, at least to start the season, like an even more dominant player than we saw during stretches of last year. And so finally, that's what I want to ask you is he just turned 32. So a couple of indicators there. He missed 7 games last year. And as we know, Julio doesn't necessarily miss a ton of games, but he does miss a lot of practices. Are you at all concerned about his ability to hold up, not for the 2 years beyond this season he's still under contract, but just for this year?
A lot to unpack there because, yes, he's 32. Yes, he had a soft tissue injury, being a hamstring injury that cost him 7 games last year. It was really the same injury. It was a hamstring that he had intermittent episodic problems with it. And so he really wasn't himself the whole year. That being said, as Mike referenced, he still was a big play guy when he was on the field. He still had this high, he had a high percentage of big plays when he was playing, other than one game where he was pretty severely compromised. If you look at his time in the league, ever since in 2013, he missed a lot of games. I think he missed 11 games. Due to injury. But after that, the fewest number of games he played in a year was 14. And that was only one time. The rest of the time, it was either 15 or 16 games up until last year. So I think there's a perception issue about Julio being banged up a lot. But what do you care if he's ultimately productive on the days that he's on the field? This year was the only real red flag. And it matters because it is the most recent and he's over 30 and it's a soft tissue injury. That being said, I think part of the reason that last year was so bad is because he never really had the recovery time that he needed. You know, for example, in football, you can't take 6 weeks off typically to let a hamstring fully heal, especially if you're somebody like Julio, you're trying to press through, you come back too soon, it flares up, and then it's a problem. Now he's had an entire offseason, he's had a chance to get himself in really good shape. That downtime, that is going to help him come in healthy to this year. And to your point about missing practice, let's just talk about the Tennessee Titans. AJ Brown had an off day every single week last year. Why? Because he was playing with a knee issue that we know he underwent surgery for as soon as the season ended. But did you notice it when he was on the field? No, he was still super productive and managed to play through this injury. And I think Tennessee has been very good. They did it with, who's their tight end that I loved, who used to be
Donnie
there?
Smith.
Before
Delanie Walker.
Delanie Walker, former 49er Delanie Walker. I'm having a little name searching problem, but they've been good about managing their veterans as they needed to help enable them to be productive on game day. That's ultimately what matters the most. So I think he's in a very good situation just from the medical standpoint and the player management standpoint to help him be as healthy as he can be across the course of the year. And I still think he definitely, because of his skill set, as you guys mentioned, it's not impacted when he's healthy. I think if they proactively rest him, he's going to end up being really productive for them this year.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza,
the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com today or just stop by.
And no surprise, when you've got a former player, Mike Vrabel, as your head coach, that he's got a good understanding of how those veterans want to work during the week. It did not seem to limit A.J. Brown last year when he was playing, as we know, throughout the season with that knee injury that he was managing. I expect the same from Julio. You know, I think one of the things that's going to always be a narrative with Julio is the lack of touchdowns. And Mike, you are the king of regression models and also just our projections and basically everything that's useful in fantasy football at ESPN. I've always believed that, like, it's just been bad luck for Julio Jones. Do you feel that there is any way to project that Julio's changing of offenses will mean anything whatsoever about his ability to find the end zone? Because if he finds the end zone with his yards per game that he has throughout his 10-year career, like as you said, like wide receiver 15 might be low on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it was a mix of two things. Sometimes he wasn't targeted near the end zone, which never made sense to us. And other times they would be like, okay, we're going to target you near the end zone. And it just didn't work. So he had, like, you look at 2017, his OTD or his expected touchdown total was in the 8 to 9 range. He only had 3 touchdowns. After that, it jumped to 8.5. He scored 8 touchdowns, so he was back on track. 2019, he had 6 touchdowns. His expected total was 6.1. He was right on track. Last season, 3 touchdowns, 3.9. So I don't think that it's as severe as people think. It's just a matter of getting him the ball in that area. But he certainly had some bad luck and at times a lack of opportunity. Again, I think the biggest thing is, like I said, opportunity. And are you going to get that or get more of that in an offense that has led the NFL in touchdowns? I said that for the third time now. I think it's really important over the past 2 seasons. Yes, of course he will. He should get more work down near the end zone. So I think he'll be fine in that department. I believe I have him, if I'm not mistaken, with, let's see, 7. I have him projected with 7 touchdowns. Again, we're not looking at a guy who's, I'm not projecting Julio Jones like prime 27, 28-year-old Julio Jones, right, in a pass-heavy offense. I have him now 2nd in line for A.J. Brown. This is still enough with 78 catches, around 1,100 yards, 7 touchdowns. That's enough to make him a, just inside the top 20 sort of fantasy wide receiver. So I'm not, again, no major concerns there. I guess the only thing you're worried about is the goal line draws near really is Derrick Henry, right? Because we know he's option 1, 2, and 3 when they get to the goal line. But after that, Jones very well could finish 2nd on this team in touchdowns. At the worst, he probably ends up 3rd.
So we all feel like there's a chance for Julio to probably slide somewhere based off ADP in that wide receiver, maybe 10 to 20 range, and has a chance to maybe even finish as a top 10 scoring wide receiver. Just a couple of things break right. He's still a really, really talented guy. Let's get to the impact of the field.
One more nugget, though, I just want to throw in here just to play devil's advocate very slightly, just something to keep in mind. If you look back at the past 5 seasons in the NFL and look at the top 20 wide receivers all 5 seasons, that's, of course, a sample of 100. Only 4 of those 100 were by a player who was age 32 to open the season. They were Julian Edelman twice, Larry Fitzgerald twice. Yeah. That's interesting. That gives me a little pause on him, a little concern, just because we've seen that fall off. You know, maybe that means he settles in as a wide receiver 3, or maybe it means he misses some time, or maybe it means he's the exception because he is maybe the best wide receiver in the NFL over the past decade. So I just wanted to throw that in there. I think it was an interesting nugget, something to keep in mind with Julio Jones.
Well, Mike, you're not the only one that's concerned about that. As we know, the NFL was concerned about that, right? I mean, there was a small market for a guy who will one day have a gold jacket on, is likely a first ballot Hall of Famer 5 years after he decides to hang them up. So let's get to the other players that may or may not be impacted by this. Mike, I think some people think about A.J. Brown and the fallout. A.J. Brown, by the way, the second best recruiter in America behind only Nick Saban, who, of course, was begging for the Titans to acquire Julio Jones and pleading with Julio Jones to make it happen. It worked. Does this make anything? Does this change anything for A.J. Brown's value? Does it make it go up? Does it make it go down? Is A.J. Brown one of those guys that, like, I could be the Titans' number two wide receiver and you'd still feel the same way about him as you would with Julio Jones as the number two wide receiver?
It changes it very little. I did take about 1% of a target share away from him. It made very little impact. Maybe you drop him down from wide receiver 4 or 5 on your board to 7 or 8. It's a small margin. Jumping a guy like Calvin Ridley ahead of him, who we'll get to later, is fine by my estimation. I did that as well. But look, I think that Brown looks like a superstar without question. I think we'd be even higher on him had he not missed 2 games early on last season, because he ended up with a 28% target share during the weeks he played and was the 4th highest scoring wide receiver those weeks. So the guy has just been terrific. His efficiency is off the charts. He has also benefited from this offense, of course, which, by the way, we should mention, you mentioned it toward the top. Arthur Smith is gone. I'm a little nervous about that. You know, who is the real reason that offense has been so dominant the past couple of years? Is it Arthur Smith, or is it Ryan Tannehill just being maximized and being in a good situation? Or is it Derrick Henry and AJ Brown and these guys that were around Tannehill? So there are some more questions with them than there were a season ago. But at the end of the day, I think Brown is just so good, can do so much with the ball in his hands. And again, even though Julio Jones is there, there's room for a high target share for Julio Jones because of the players that left. So AJ Brown already had a path to a big target share that should be in the 27 to 29% range, maybe a pinch higher than that. That's available, and that's not really hurt by Jones showing up. So I still have very high expectations for him, right around 1,300 yards and 9 touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, I feel this again, Mike. You're speaking the words that I am expecting to speak just a few minutes after you. And AJ Brown, such a unique player too, right? I mean, I guess the other thing that probably is understood, but we don't talk about enough, is that AJ Brown's going into his 3rd year in the NFL. Like, the idea of he or DK Metcalf or other young wide receivers like Terry McLaurin going into year 3, getting better just because they're improving, they actually have an off season this year, they can get work in with their quarterback, that right there should not be discounted. So I too have AJ Brown. I'm a wide receiver 6. I think I might be as bullish as basically anybody on ESPN in terms of my initial wide receiver rankings for where AJ Brown is. AJ Brown certainly has a lot to be proud of with his effort of recruiting Julio, and the Titans are very, very happy for it. All right, let's see. We're going to hit this library in just a second here, but one more before we do, actually. Let's get to Ryan Tannehill. So Ryan Tannehill, maybe, is he the biggest winner in this trade, Mike? Is he the biggest fantasy winner in this trade other than perhaps Calvin Ridley?
You know, it's the problem is when you go and I'm sure you guys had the same experience, right? You see the trade, you adjust Julio and Brown in your rankings and move these guys around. And then you get to quarterback and you're like, okay, time to move Tannehill up and Matt Ryan down. And you're like, who am I moving Tannehill ahead of? Right. Like, you're not moving him up like in the Mahomes, Allen, Kyler, Dak, Lamar Jackson territory. Then you have Aaron Rodgers. You know, it depends if you think he's going to play for Green Bay or not. Justin Herbert, nope, not jumping in. Russell Wilson, not going to jump him either. Then you're in it's like Brady, Tannehill. I already had Tannehill 10th. Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow, Stafford. You're in that kind of range. So I already had him kind of in that tier, in that range at QB 10. It's hard to move him up. So even if your expectations are a little higher, I don't think he jumps into that next year. But at the same time, he was QB 7 last year, right? So I think it's fair to say he's more secure as a back end QB 1, and that's where I'll be drafting.
Yeah, I feel the exact same. I mean, God, I keep saying that. I'm going to stop saying that. I feel the exact same way. I'm going to get mad at you in a second, Mike, and just find some way to disagree with you, because I feel the same way. If you walk away from your draft with Ryan Tannehill as your quarterback, you should feel pretty good. The options in terms of pass catchers around him are as good as you can find in 1-2 wide receiver sets, or at least one of the best in the NFL right now. Hey, here's the impact on Derrick Henry. There is no impact. It's Derrick freaking Henry. I mean, if anything, he might score even more touchdowns, but the guy has 26 red zone rushing touchdowns over the past 2 years. There really isn't that much room for him to go up, and maybe he does just a little bit, right? Like, the guy is incredible. We're going to get over to the Falcons side in just a moment. Before we do, a quick word from our friends over at Geico. Hey, do you own or rent your home? I'm sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. Actually, I know it can be hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. All right, as we evaluate the other side of this, I don't want to get too far into whether the Falcons should have gotten more for Julio Jones. The market was what it was. But there are some players that are going to be impacted by this. And Stefania, I'm going to start with you, because as people who have listened to the offseason edition of the podcast know, you in our rookie dynasty league, which has which is a two quarterback league, but you're pretty secure there. You took Kyle Pitts. It's a super flex league. So you could potentially play him in your OP spot as well. You took Kyle Pitts number one overall this year. Your thoughts on this move for Kyle Pitts? Did this, like, if you had known this trade was going to happen before you took Kyle Pitts, would it have made that much easier of a decision? Yeah, you're still taking him. Would you have taken him number zero?
Yeah, exactly. I think it just cements. We thought this might be a possibility at the time that we were drafting for Dynasty. And either way, we thought he was going to have a significant role, probably an evolving role. You know, clearly he's a rookie, but I think this just opens up the doors even more. It makes it less crowded, if you will. I mean, I feel like he is the number two pass catching option besides Calvin Ridley, and that can only mean good things. So I think that it's going to potentially launch Kyle Pitts into the George Kittle, you know, Travis Kelce is in a league of his own right now. I think we think that Kyle Pitts certainly has the potential to finish in the top five. I think that over the course of somewhere in the latter half of year one, going into year two, this could launch him into that Travis Kelce tier.
It's lofty comparisons because Travis Kelce is so unique, but Mike, this is the highest drafted tight end in the real draft in the modern era and arguably ever. There were a couple of guys drafted like 100 years ago when Matthew was in college who were drafted as running backs and then ended up playing some end in the NFL. But let me ask you this about Kyle Pitts. Do you believe there is... So one of the narratives that you always hear about fantasy football, and it's not really a narrative, it's a fact. Rookie tight ends struggle major league to make it in the NFL right away in fantasy. Are you concerned at all about the fantasy part here for Kyle Pitts, or is this guy that much of a unicorn?
Yeah, I'm not too worried, but at the same time, I'm probably not going to end up with him in many drafts just because he's already going. If you look at like early best ball drafts, 12 teamers, he's going in like round five. It's too much for me, you know, just for a guy that's never played it down in the NFL. And look, nobody is a sure thing in the NFL. I mean, we hear every year like, oh, this is probably the safest guy, the highest floor prospect in the draft. And that guy doesn't pan out all the time, right? And then the guy that's considered a, you know, a boom bust guy, you know, ends up just as a solid player, you know, doesn't maybe hit his ceiling or his floor and is just a solid player in the NFL. It's so hard to know who's going to be good. And you have to keep this in mind. And look, I don't really want to say this. No one else has really said this. Everyone is just talking about Kyle Pitts' ceiling. There is a chance he doesn't pan out. It's possible. And there's also
stop
a chance.
It.
There's
stop
also
your chatter, Mike Clay.
I'm sorry, somebody. I'm just going to be the guy that says it, that plays the Buzz Killington role. Somebody has to do it. There's also a chance that he does pan out, but maybe he breaks out in the fantasy playoffs this year or next season. Maybe he's a year or two breakout, right? So you have to keep that in mind. And all, again, it's across the whole industry. All that's discussed is his ceiling. And it's in year one. It's like he's going to come right out and be this superstar player right away. So that's all the point of saying that is that I'm not going crazy with my rankings, right? Like I've seen some people rank him in that top tier and I can't do it, right? You have TJ Hockenson, Mark Andrews, George Kittle, Darren Waller. I take all those guys in 2021 season long leagues before Kyle Pitts. After that, all bets are off. But again, I'm struggling with that ADP. I just don't think I can swallow it. When you look at what's available at the wide receiver position and even at tight end in that range. But all that being said, I mean, to Stefani's point, I mean, where are the targets going to go, right? You have Calvin Ridley. He's going to be extremely busy. And then there's, who is it? You know, it's Olamide Zaccheaus, you know, is it
Russell Gage?
It's right. It should be, Tajay Sharpe looking good, you know, maybe a revival for Tajay Sharpe, who's on the roster, Frank Darby, the rookie. I mean, it should be Kyle Pitts comfortably second, Hayden Hurst, of course, in that mix as well. But, you know, there's just keep in mind both sides of the coin with these rookies And that goes for all of them, not just Kyle Pitts. I think we get too excited looking at the ceiling and don't consider all the possible outcomes.
All right. So let me just say this. This is a good example of why I believe in tiers, not, I mean, we have rankings. I'm not saying I don't believe in rankings, but sometimes why I struggle with, you know, player by player rankings, because if somebody just like clipped off the last, let's say 90 seconds of what Mike, you just said right there, it might sound a little bit pessimistic about your outlook for him, Mike, but he's your tight end six, right? I've been tight end five. You have been tight end six. I think it's probably a good point to illuminate that, like, hey, the gap between 4 to 5 and 5 to 6 in your rankings may be decidedly different. I hear you all out. I hear you out and everything. I think ultimately Kyle Pitts will probably end up going in redraft leagues higher than I am currently comfortable taking him as well. But I'll say this, part of me is inclined to pay the premium at some point in one of my drafts just because of like the whatever, whether it's a 5%, 10%, 20% chance that he has the greatest rookie season for a tight end ever. I don't want to be the person that misses out on that party. I mean, he is such a special, special prospect, and someone has to catch passes in Atlanta. I think the player that we feel most secure about in Atlanta without question is Calvin Ridley, Mike. He was a star last year, wide receiver 4 on a point per game basis, behind only Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, and Stephon Diggs. I mean, the guy is a ridiculous megastar for the Falcons. Is it within the realm of possibilities that Calvin Ridley will be wide receiver 1 this year?
It's absolutely possible because the volume is going to be there. I mean, just look at last season. Now, first of all, even including Julio Jones playing about half the season and including the fact that Ridley missed about a game and a half, he was already top 10 at wide receiver in targets, in end zone targets. He was wide receiver 5 in fantasy points. He averaged 9.0 targets per game. That's already wide receiver 1 territory. Honestly, like I said, mid-range wide receiver 1 territory. In the 5 games that Jones was at, in the 5 full games he played without Julio Jones, his target share jumped all the way up to 31%. 11.9 per game. Actually, it was 7 games Jones missed completely. And he was a top 3 fantasy wide receiver in that split as well. So again, it's not the same offense. Again, it'll be more balanced, maybe even run heavy. But at the same time, the target share should be a career high. He should set a career high in targets if he's healthy. And he has the talent, obviously, to be that top scoring wide receiver. So I'm not saying I'm ranking him ahead of those guys like a Tyreek Hill or even a Devontae Adams at this point. Stephon Diggs is there. And then it gets close, right? Once you get to DeAndre Hopkins and DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, Justin Jefferson, Michael Thomas, he's right in that range. And honestly, I have him 5th on my board. So I have Hopkins ahead with those other 3 guys. Ridley checks in as a 2nd round pick in draft. So, but to answer your question, yes, I think he has the talent and situation to be the number 1 scoring wide receiver.
I think people don't realize that Calvin Ridley was hurt more than he let on. You know, as you mentioned, Mike, he missed a game that then went into the bye week. But if you look back at the injury reports, practice reports, he was often on them because of his foot, and it cost him some time in games. He was in and out of a couple of games, still was able to make big plays, obviously had a solid season nonetheless, but he was dealing with an injury of his own. And I wouldn't be surprised if they sort of give him, you know, the benefit of the doubt, being the number 1 in Atlanta, coming in a little bit lighter in training camp in terms of the amount of work he'll be asked to do. Don't know how much he'll play in the preseason. And all of that to me just helps Kyle Pitts grow a little bit faster and puts a little more demand on him. So I think it'll be really interesting to watch what the Falcons are doing during training camp. I think there's a lot that's going to happen here that's going to help shake out what the offense looks like.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
The last player that I think people are going to ask a lot about, and we're going to tie together some loose ends after that, is Matt Ryan. And Mike, you've got him where I have him, where Daniel has him as well. That's weird. We all have him at quarterback 14, which last year on a points per game basis, he was quarterback 14. So this is a player who has a lot of pressure on him. The Falcons did pass on a quarterback fourth overall. Not like Matt Ryan's job is on the line this year, but just to validate what the Falcons did in their approach this offseason. There's a chance, of course, that Matt Ryan's a top 10 quarterback, but is he a guy that if you left your draft with Matt Ryan as your starter, you'd feel okay with that?
No, I would not feel okay with that. You know, he's a QB2 right now. I mean, look, he has one top 10 fantasy campaign over the past four seasons. The volume's going to come down. I mean, you look at this Tennessee offense, they were 31st in pass attempts last season. Matt Ryan has been near the top of the league in that category most seasons over the past decade, right? So he's really relied on that heavy volume, and still he struggled the past few seasons to be fantasy relevant, to be a QB1. He's flashed at times, he peaks once in a while, but usually he hasn't been there. He also adds pretty much nothing with his legs, which is a concern as well. You're hoping here, what your hope here is probably twofold. One, you're hoping the defense struggles, right? That's going to mean a lot of passing in the second half. And you're also hoping that Arthur Smith was the key to what the Titans did. And he goes to Atlanta and basically reinvigorates Matt Ryan, much like he did Ryan Tannehill. Remember, Ryan Tannehill was not really close to an above average quarterback or fantasy relevant. I think he had one season in Miami that he was in the QB1 conversation. And now he's obviously, we're talking about him every week as a streaming option or a back in QB1. And he's been one of the most efficient players in the NFL over the past couple of seasons. So that's really what you're banking on with Matt Ryan if you take a shot. But honestly, I'm not excited about him, especially with Jones gone. And I think the floor or the ceiling is low just because he doesn't add value with his legs. It's a big concern with so many running quarterbacks in the NFL right now. So those are really the concerns I have with Ryan.
Yeah, it really is. One of these days, Mike Clay, because I'm not smart enough to do this, but one of these days, Mike Clay is going to put out a piece where it's going to be like one of those like bar graphs where it's going to be two intersecting lines. It's going to show you, all right, if a quarterback rushes for, let's say, 800 plus yards and 4 plus touchdowns, like how much of a gap there needs to be between a passing quarterback that has basically negligible rushing yardage to surpass that rushing quarterback, right? So like if Jalen Hurts rushes the football a ton this year, he may need to throw for like 3,000 yards to surpass a quarterback that throws for like 4,500 and 30 touchdowns. It's just the way that the game seems to be going, at least for quarterbacks in fantasy football. I'm not saying all quarterbacks in real football need to be able to run to be successful. Tom Brady is okay at the game, but so many fantasy quarterbacks are guys that have the ability to unlock their legs and be a huge, huge factor in that facet of the offense.
Not to cut you off, but I think you can do that drill right now. Just go and look at the difference in stats from Tom Brady and Lamar Jackson last season, because they were 5 fantasy points apart. And Tom Brady threw for just about 2,000 more yards. He had 14 more passing touchdowns. But to your point, Lamar Jackson had 1,005 rushing yards and 7 rushing touchdowns. Tom Brady had 6 rushing yards and 3 rushing touchdowns.
Last year. Probably all at the goal line, and he probably scored on every one.
Exactly. So
that is amazing.
They're 5 fantasy points apart with 2,000, a gap of 2,000 and 14 passing touchdowns.
Truly remarkable. That is impressive stuff right there. All right. So, but before we say goodbye on this show, wrap it up, the Julio Jones trade and the fantasy fallout. Is there anybody else? So we've already mentioned whether it's a Russell Gage, whether it's a Hayden Hurst. Are we sleeping on him, Mike? I've seen some smart people on Twitter note that, like, hey, if part of the reason why you drafted Kyle Pitts fourth overall is you could, in effect, use him as a wide receiver, does that mean that Hayden Hurst could be like a tight end that operates in the middle of the field and sees a workload that's similar or maybe even above where he was last year?
No, I don't think so. I think Hurst's target share will go down to more of the 10% range. You don't see that. You don't see two top 10 or top 12 even fantasy tight ends from the same team. It's extremely rare. You have to really build your offense around that. And I just don't think, even with the lack of wide receiver, proven talent, we'll say, to put it kindly, at wide receiver for Atlanta, I still think he's going to be hard pressed to be a guy that you go into a week thinking, okay, I'm going to start Hayden Hurst at tight end. We already didn't like him last year, and that was before Kyle Pitts. So I don't see it. And as for Russell Gage, I will say this in his defense, last year, during the games that Ridley and Jones played in full, he had a 20% target share and was wide receiver 15 in fantasy, which I don't think many people realize he was so good those weeks. But and he was also 22nd for the season in targets. However, his efficiency has not been very good, and we know how deep and talented the wide receiver position is. So He's a tough one for me, right? I see a path where he could just quietly chip away and end up being wide receiver 29 by season's end, especially if, you know, like I said earlier, if their defense struggles and they need to throw the ball a lot. But at the same time, it's just so hard to get excited about him when you see all that raw talent at wide receiver through the middle rounds of draft. So for me, I'll take him in the double digit rounds, throw him on my bench and see what happens. But I'm just not excited about the ceiling there.
Mike, you always do such a good job of just sort of cutting through it all and just get right to the heart of what you intend to say. Great stuff there, as always. Any last thoughts from you, Stefania, on the Julio trade, that whether it's fantasy or real related?
No, I think I would just echo what Mike said about Hayden Hurst, because I actually thought Hayden Hurst was going to have kind of a bounce back year coming to this pass happy offense, knowing that, you know, Baltimore was a little bit crowded and thought there might be more of an opportunity from him. And it didn't really show up that way. So I don't see how it does anything but drop down a little bit, even if they run two tight end sets. We saw that some in Tennessee. Didn't mean that they had two tight ends who were catching a ton of passes. So I think Kyle Pitts is your fantasy tight end in that team. And Hayden Hurst could be a boost for that team in an NFL role, but not for fantasy.
Okay, there you have it. Well, so much to be excited about for this Julio Jones trade if you're a Titans fan. And I think for Falcons fans, it may be hard to feel this right now, but trust the process, right? I mean, you've got two people that I think are really smart who are now largely overseeing your operation, and Terry Fontenot and also Arthur Smith. There was going to be no easy way around the cap situation that they inherited this year. So it's a difficult pill to swallow, losing easily the best wide receiver, I think. Well, respect to Roddy White, who was also an amazing wide receiver for the Falcons, but, you know, one of the best players to ever put on a Falcons uniform. But the Falcons are now on to the next chapter. Daniel Dopp, you had your hand raised to say something. What do you got?
Best wide receiving duo in the NFL now, A.J. Brown and Julio Jones.
Definitely comes to mind for me. I think you got to be talking about between those two. If you consider Travis Kelce, if it's just receiving threats, Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill certainly in the mix, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, Mike Evans, and also Chris Godwin. Mike, anybody else that you want to offer up there?
There's a lot. Jefferson and Thielen for sure. Jefferson Evans and Godwin. Good.
Yeah.
There's also ones that have so much potential, like Stefania, Ayuk and Debo, right? I mean, yeah. Who knows what those two.
Tyrell Williams, second-round pick. And I'm on Ross St. Brown. Yeah.
Quentin Cephas.
Detroit was at the top.
Yeah. You know, I think the Cowboys, you could certainly see, the best version of CeeDee Lamb plus Amari Cooper. Lamb. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some good ones out there. Some
a lot of good wide receivers. Good. We literally just listed, like, we haven't even gone through like a quarter of the wide receivers in the NFL, and we just listed a bunch of great ones.
So to Mike's point, like, you can pass on guys like Russell Gage in your drafts because there's so much other talent to mine somewhere along the line in the middle round. All right. So for Mike Clay, NFL, and Stefania _ ESPN at Daniel Dopp, I am Field Yates. We will likely be back next Tuesday, and hopefully we'll have some stuff to talk about. I don't think there will be a ton of news, but you never know in the NFL, and perhaps there's a new chapter in the Aaron Rodgers saga. Until then, we will talk to you guys soon. Be well and peace out.
She's got a smile that'll melt your heart. She's always there to lend a helping hand. Her fantasy knowledge is just the start. Her skills are highly in demand. She's our Bay Area lady out there hustling for us. With advice that we really trust. Bay Area lady, always there to help. She's not a cone, she's your favorite gal. She's Stefania Bell.